This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
What does motion sound like? With Kizikans free shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at Kizik.com/socks.
Hey, you're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 334, brought to you by Graphically and iFanboy members like you. All right.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday
to you.
Go to hell, you old bastard.
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 334, where I talk progressively slower after starting very fast. I am Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
All right. And Connor Kilpatrick.
You're killing me.
Kira.
Seriously, Real World Season 8, Confession in the Ford Ranger on the side of the road.
Awesome.
Best reality TV moment maybe ever. Yep. That's a little tip for those of you oldsters out there. Aging oldsters killed. iFanboy.com is our website about comic. In my mind, Wes Dodley still reports on my eventual death, even though I've moved out of New York City.
Two middle-aged hipsters are found dead in Inwood.
Yeah.
It's always a murder.
Yep.
You're just assuming someone's going to take you down hard.
Aging hipsters killed in the horrible bear attack, formerly of Queens. iFanboy.com is our website. It's about comic books, although you would have no idea about that up until this point. Every week we read a bunch of comic books, and one of us has to pick the one that they like best. We call that the pick of the week. Write about it on the website. We come here, we talk about that on the show for like 10 minutes, and then we talk about other comics for a while. And actually, we've got it timed down pretty well, but you're not supposed to know about that. And other stuff we want to talk about, like the book of the month, for example, that's coming up later in the show. Before we get going, we're going to be talking about what happens in the books, because otherwise the show would just be like, that thing, that was cool, right? Oh, yeah, yeah. You know how he – yeah, I do. And that wouldn't be very good. So spoilers are in your future if you haven't read your books. So get on that and read them and come back, or just throw caution to the wind, which I'm also totally cool with. Ron, pick of the week.
Yes, and it was a very special pick of the week because this year Comic Book Day fell on my birthday. And
oh, come on, we know.
My pick of the week pick was also on that day. Connor, our statistician, has that ever happened before?
I think when it has, normally they've swapped out.
Oh, okay. Well, why didn't I swap out?
I don't know.
I don't know why either. It was very stressful.
There's been a pick of the week on a birthday. There's been – I had surgery on one of the pick of the weeks.
Yeah,
that happened. Was that a pick of the week day?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No, that was
pick of the week recording day.
It was, yeah.
Oh, right. Well, that's,
you had surgery on recording day, not the actual pick day.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, yeah.
This is why we employ Connor. He remembers.
Oh, yeah. What do you
Josh had a pick of the week on my birthday, but it wasn't mine. I think we've always just swapped. For some reason, I just wasn't going to say anything. I was going to let you take it.
You just want to see what would happen. And so, you know, I indulged a little. It was my day. And so I went with Uncanny X-Force number 25. And I had a lot of books to read. But sometimes you read a comic book and sometimes you get to the third page and you realize what the writer's doing and you laugh for 5 minutes in a cab consecutively to the point where the cabbie wants to know what's the matter. And then you go, that's the pick of the week. And really what it boils down to was, so this is the 25th issue of Uncanny X-Force, written by Rick Remender with art by Mike McCone. And the pivotal pick of the week making scene is an opening scene where Deadpool is tracking someone. Wolverine has him on a recon mission, and Deadpool's doing his normal inner monologue, which normally annoys me. But Remender does it just balanced, just enough humor.
Just enough.
Yeah. And so he's going along, and it's pretty rapid fire talking, and he's talking, and Wade Wilson is talking about raising money for a movie, and I was like, all right, what is he talking about? And then I get to the third page, and at the top of the book, the narration says, was this an opportunity? You bet your ass. And Wade Wilson was prepared. And I went, he's doing Robert Evans.
He did a really good Robert Evans.
It was really a great Robert Evans. And for those who don't know who Robert Evans is, Connor, do you want to explain?
Inside the very realm.
Use the internet.
I use the internet. Yeah. I put a link in my review on ifanboy.com of the Pick of the Week review. You can go see some clips from the excellent documentary, The Kid Stays in the Picture.
Legendary Hollywood producer, produced The Godfather, produced,
Big Seven. A man could never know the heart of a woman.
Listen, had his wife stolen by Steve McQueen. He's, you know.
Listen, I said, Francis, I want to smell the tomato sauce.
Gonna do a movie about Italian gangsters with a bunch of Jews? What are you, crazy? Francis, I said, he's got a slightly pinched nose, which I think is cocaine abuse, but I'm not sure.
Yes, he doesn't have a nose. It's all the cartilage just gone.
It's completely gone. He looks worse than Michael Jackson. Michael, I said, you gonna have a monkey in the house like that?
But it wasn't.
Did he want to have it? You bet your ass he did. How do you like them fucking bananas?
It wasn't just that that scene that made me pick this book, though. But the phenomenon of Uncanny X-Force continues. Like, after the Dark Angel saga ended, like, Remender totally could have walked away.
Yeah.
Like, he did this great thing, and it was fun. But he's sticking with it and continuing on. And what's great is that the ramifications, like, this book has there's a cost to what they're doing. You know, the idea of this X-Force team being the mutant team that makes the tough decisions so the other X-Men don't have to, and Wolverine and Phantom X and Deadpool and Psylocke are going to kill the people who need to be killed without, you know, being secret and all stuff, that's going to have a cost. And Remender's always talked about it having that cost, and it continues to have those repercussions. And what I thought was even more interesting is that Remender is still keeping, like, the fallout from the Dark Angel saga. Basically, were two major things that happened was that Warren Worthington got his mind wiped, and now he's this, you know, happy-go-lucky, blissfully ignorant person who thinks he's an angel. And Kid Apocalypse has been kind of reborn, and now is a teenager. And both Angel and Kid Apocalypse are dropped off at Wolverine school, and Remender's keeping a toe in there. Like, they're still part of that X-Force world, even though they are in Wolverine the X-Men, and even though they're a big part of that, like, the books are intertwined in that way. And he reminds us with just a couple of scenes in this book that does exist, that is still a problem. This is the first issue of the next story arc, which is called The Final Execution, or just Final Execution. And there's a lot of coming and going. So Nightcrawler from the Age of Apocalypse world has decided he's going to stick around because he realizes that he can use Wolverine and the team to hunt down his enemies from the Age of Apocalypse world that are now in the 616 world. So we still get a little more Nightcrawler. Psylocke has decided after everything that happened with Angel, after in the Otherworld arc killing her brother, that she's had enough, and so she walks. Phantom X, because the money is dried up, he decides to walk, but it's really because he and Psylocke slept together, and now she doesn't want him anymore. So you get a little bit of characters leaving, characters coming, and all the while Deadpool has uncovered on his little recon mission, he's uncovered the next villain, which is not an offshoot, but a regeneration of Omega Red as a villain, and now there's several of them, and Wolverine and Nightcrawler and Deadpool get into a fight towards the end of it. I just, like, when I think about what I want out of an X-Men book, it's what Remender is doing. It's a combination of high impact action and stakes combined with relationships and, like I said, consequences and continued story points, continued things that happen. And you can read a story and enjoy it self-contained, but if you're reading the entire tapestry, it's that much more enjoyable. And, you know, this was just another example of being able to do that. And it had Robert Evans, so there you go.
It's a really nice balance. I think what you have here is you have the team falling apart.
Yeah.
You know, we've had 2 years now of the team, you know, building this team, this family together, and them dealing with crisis together and leaning on each other because it's very emotionally draining to be on this team. And then they've had enough. Angel's gone. Psylocke is, you know, quote unquote gone. You know, Phantom X is quote unquote gone. And you're left with basically the shambles of your team, and you know what comes out of it may or may not be what came into it. But it's always that pivotal moment in a team book. That's a really good team book where the team faces adversity and doesn't necessarily come out of it as they went in. And it's fun. It's really good. Mike McCone was. Did he change his style?
He did. I made that point in my review. He did, because the last thing I read of McCone was on Spider-Man, and it was very. Very clean lined, rigid. It was very kind of that. And I believe the combination of him tweaking his style as well as, once again, Dean White coming in with that palette. I really thought, you know, McCone adapted to what he needed to fit in with the look of X-Force. And I liked it. I thought it was good.
I liked his old style, but it's not bad. It's certainly not bad. It's just I was expecting a different art when I opened the book up because McCone. But
no, he definitely did tweak his style. He definitely did.
Yeah. Now there was also two backup stories that were old Remender and Opeña stories featuring characters in this book, and I quite liked the Wolverine story, but I quite did not like the Deadpool story.
Yeah, well, I think a big part of that was the just the fact that I think it was before they had figured it out.
Yeah.
You know, it was Remender writing and Opeña drawing on this Deadpool story, and I don't quite think that they were quite there yet. But interesting to see how far they've come. I think
interesting to see the Opeña's arc as an artist, and the Wolverine story is very quietly influenced.
Yes, yeah,
a lot. And then so he's, but you can still see his what he's become in there.
Yep,
that was interesting. I liked the Wolverine story a lot. But,
yeah,
the issue was really, really solid, really good.
Yeah, it was good, and you know, and it was 25th issue. It was a buck more, so it was $4.99, but it was 40 pages of content. You got those two backup stories, which are, you know, kind of from the archives, from the vault, so to speak. And and it's just fun, and like that's the thing. Like as an X-Men fan, it really, like, this past year and a half has just been so, like, so great, and mainly it's been because of Uncanny X-Force. So
I want to say that I'm not up to issue on this, but I've finished the first three books.
Yep,
and I really liked it.
Yeah,
a lot.
Right.
Even regardless of the art, some of which I liked and some I didn't. That third book is fantastic, the Age of Apocalypse book.
Yeah.
And I've never read Deadpool. I've seen him in places where I was like, oh, that's enough of that character. He's funny in this book. I like him a lot in this book. I have no problem with Phantom X in this book, although I know people do for some reason that I don't entirely understand.
No, this book has made me – I hated Phantom X, and this book has made me like him a lot.
Deadpool is kind of Remender's id gone wild in this book, which is –
but he doesn't get to show up the whole time.
It's fine in small doses.
What's funny is that when so at Emerald City, I crash moderated his Remender spotlight panel because he didn't have one and he was freaking out. But he revealed that he's Deadpool. Like, he had never read a Deadpool comic before writing the character, and he said he still hasn't. And if you're familiar with Remender's work, he did a comic back in the early 2000s called Blackheart Billy, which is about a punk rock skateboarding robot kind of thing. And he said that he's just writing Blackheart Billy when he's writing Deadpool, which is, Connor, your point of it's his id gone wild. That's all it is. It's the sarcastic, unfiltered, you know, run. It just happens to be that it's fitting within Deadpool really well. So,
yeah, it's entertaining.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, good times. But, so that was the pick of the week. A strong, strong contender was, if you ask me, if you're reading, and here's our AVX update, but if you're reading Avengers vs. X-Men and you're not reading Wolverine and the X-Men, then you're missing out, because Wolverine and the X-Men is actually making this book, making the whole Avengers vs. X-Men event a lot better for me.
Yeah. So this was another great issue. It does a really hard job in keeping, you know, Cyclops and the team come to the Wolverine school, and so you've got the whole AVX story that's crashing into the Wolverine and the X-Men story, but he manages to do both.
Yes.
You don't feel like one is, you know, overwhelming the other, where you still get the development that's happening for the people at the school while the crossover has crashed into the book. So I think he did a really good job of balancing the two together.
And I think that also the tension of the AVX issue, like the Wolverine Cyclops meeting and like them talking and stuff like that, like I felt the tension reading it. Mm-hmm. You know, like you really get to understand where the gap and the problem between Wolverine and Cyclops is. And then what I thought was really interesting was the reactions of the other X-Men.
Yeah, you know? I liked Iceman a lot.
Yeah, me too. I mean, basically you've got the X-Men that are at the school with Wolverine don't agree with Wolverine, and they're siding with Cyclops, and they're going off. So Phoenix, or Rachel, and Iceman and Angel are going off to help Cyclops, which is really interesting. I mean, it's another layer to this whole mutant, you know, non-mutant kind of dilemma that they've set up in the Marvel Universe. And honestly, it's making AVX a lot more enriched in my mind. So,
It's a nice tension. You know, Iceman says, you know, he's Scott. He's my oldest friend. He saved my life more than anybody. Of course I'm going with him. And so then, you know, Wolverine just assumes because they left originally that they're going to side with him. But, you know, it's there's lots of interesting dynamics going on in this event, in this book, and, you know, in general. And again, we can't go without mentioning Chris Bacciello, who...
Oh, yeah. That double page spread of them walking and talking, the walk and talk there, the Sorkin moment that went along the top and then down the right and then across the middle, then down the left, then along the bottom. That was amazing. That was great. And not once did I question how to read that page.
Yeah. He brings it. He ups the level of tension with his work too.
Yes. Yeah.
Because it can be sort of chaotic, but that works in his favor because the book is very tense, and so your eyes are very tense reading.
Yeah.
But it's not like overwhelmingly or badly tense. It adds to the story.
Yeah.
Great stuff. I mean, I picture the book when he Nick Bradshaw's good, but when I picture the book, I picture Bacciello.
Oh, I love Bradshaw. I can't wait for Bradshaw to get back. But yeah, Bacciello is good. But I did like the moment of in front of the Jean Grey statue when Cyclops says, "I got to be honest, I don't know whether to thank you or to punch you."
Yeah.
Like, yeah, because there are all these questions because Scott and all of them haven't been to the school. They haven't seen what he's done yet. And it's a huge part of their legacy. So it was interesting to see that happen. And I like the little Krakoa eye kind of following them throughout the whole time. It was good. So good. So we probably should spoiler warn, right?
What? Oh. What, Josh?
I had a quick question. Just I'm curious. Like, how's very quickly, how's Avengers versus X-Men? Is it like, is it there? Are you enjoying it? Are you waiting for? I mean,
we do a show every week.
No. I'm just
we've talked about every issue.
I know we've talked about him, and it's like okay, but now as it's going into the other issues, like you're talking about how it weaves into Wolverine and the X-Men.
Yeah.
Like, how important is it to have read all of the bits, or does it actually do the things actually stand alone as they always claim it will?
Well, that's the thing, is that like I'm enjoying AVX more from reading Wolverine the X-Men. I don't think you need to read Wolverine the X-Men to read Avengers vs. X-Men.
No, you don't.
But what about vice versa?
Exactly, yeah.
It's hard to say because we've read them. So
yeah, I guess.
I have the knowledge in my head from because this issue takes place before the most recent issue of Wolverine the X-Men. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I've already, you know, it's hard to remove that information from my brain and say whether or not it'll work on its own. Mm-hmm. But you don't need the tie-in issues yet. I mean, there's nothing... You know, you always get more enriched with the tie-in issues, but you don't. Yeah. Well, not always, but you can get more enriched, but not.
There's been a habit for Marvel and DC both that some of the tie-in issues have been the best parts of these things for.
Well, yeah, that's
Civil War.
Agreed. Yeah, and I think that's happening here again too. Yeah.
There. That's all. So is there an extra spoiler warning? Is that what you're saying?
Well, we probably should, before we talk about Avengers Assemble, we should probably warn because there's no way to talk about this without talking about the movie.
Right.
And I don't want to ruin if nobody's...
Let's just blanket spoiler warning everything that's ever been produced.
Okay, let's do that. Therefore, so you can't blame us. It's our disclaimer. But anyways,
well, there's going to be some things.
Yeah. So Avengers Assemble number 3 kind of reveals the big secret or the big villain that's behind the Zodiac villains of this series so far, and it is Thanos.
Shocking.
Shocking. So, and, you know, Avengers.
What happened? Wasn't Thanos dead?
Yes.
I say that like no one's ever come back from the dead, but the last time we saw him was he was dead, right? So he hasn't come back since.
Yeah.
The Cancer World, the Nova story, the Guardians of the Galaxy story?
I forget. Oh, yeah, the Guardians of the Galaxy Cancer World story, Cancerverse, that one. Yeah, I don't know where that left off with him. I got to go back and dig those back up and read what happened to them. But yeah, people. He's the mad titan in love with death, so he keeps dying and coming back all the time. So you know, no surprise there.
That guy loves death. Just can't get enough. And death's like such a bitch to him.
She is.
I know. Well, it's death.
I don't know what's going on the art, but it's not Bagley's finest hour.
Interesting. Is he doing anything else besides besides? Nope.
Well, I guess Brilliant.
No, that's not that wasn't that good either, the one I showed. Sure,
I mean, it's,
well,
it's,
he's actually getting so fast now that people can't even talk to him.
There is a page, I don't know what page number to tell you it is, but it's
like, I'm not reading it.
It's there's a panel of Maria Hill's head, and it's she's deformed. I mean, it's just like, I was like, oh, like there are real bridge panels that are just, I don't know if they're rushed or what it is. And I look to see, it's not, you know, I don't think it's the inker. I think Danny Meekie's inking it. Like, it's I don't know what's changed other than the fact that it seems off, you know.
Is the book good?
The book's all right. I mean, it's very much the movie. I mean, it's funny how after watching the Avengers movie, this book kind of clicks more because it's that it's those characters, and you're like, oh, okay, cool. They're, you know, even though they're the 616 characters, like after watching the movie, I got a little more excited to read it and to watch. You know, to
are the characterizations different?
No, they are
in the other books.
No, they're not. I don't think they're different, but just seeing them together. I mean, and honestly, it's the Green Hulk. Seeing the Hulk behind them, like seeing, I'm looking at a panel with Cap, Hawkeye, Thor, and Hulk, and it's, you know, and like I can't help but giggle and remember the movie. So it's working on that level.
Like, is the Hawkeye?
It's
Marvel
more
Universe Hawkeye, or is
it's 616. It's more 616. Yeah. I haven't noticed a dramatic change in the characterization where I'm like, oh, that's more like the Ultimates or the movie version or anything like that. But it just I think it's more just these characters together.
Is Nick Fury Jr. in it?
I think he was. What book? Oh no, that was Captain America. No, he's not. He appeared briefly in Captain America.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's all right. I mean, so these Zodiac characters are being cosmically powered, and it turns out to be Thanos. And that was the big cliffhanger at the end. So,
Josh, Demon Knights number 9, I thought did something really smart in that it took a character with the demon Etrigan, who we've been suspicious of, and really just sort of made him a more overt villain, but a secret one. So I guess it'd be a covert villain.
But is he?
I think that's the fun thing, is that you don't know what the demon's going to do at any given moment.
Yeah, I've got to say that this has actually been one of the books in the New 52 that I forget about, but I buy it every month and I like it every month. Maybe, you know, partially because I like Paul Cornell's work, but also because it's different. It's interesting in a way that some of the other books aren't, because it doesn't have to stick with the same sort of superhero stuff that we see. But it's also very familiar in that way. Yeah, at the end of this, I thought, oh, so he's betraying them. But then the thing with these demon characters throughout DC and like sort of Hellblazer is that none of them are ever telling the truth about anything. So It's this constant circular double crossing going on. And while it appears on the surface that, you know, like, oh, he's selling them out. But there's like there's layers upon layers upon layers. Like, Xanadu is with him, but she's not. But she, like, I don't even know. And I like that. The other thing about this issue that was interesting is that, and quite bold, I thought, is that they're in this kingdom and there's these two princesses. And they said if they don't make their kingdom, if they can make their kingdom the new Camelot, then they can marry each other, the two ladies. And if they don't, then they can't. But they're in love. And it's basically a same-sex marriage parable. Which is interesting in DC Comics, who are traditionally not ones to step into the fray, and it's not really all that you know, it doesn't really jive with real life all that much, but it's an interesting thing. And if you ever sort of pay attention to the kind of stuff that Paul Cornell finds important, you will see that this sort of fits in with his oeuvre very well. And I liked it. I thought that was a bold way to go. I really like this issue, just like I had the other ones before it.
Yeah, it's very good.
I bailed.
Mm. It's not your thing.
I called this week. I bailed off of Frankenstein. I bailed off of Demon Knights. I was like, yeah, I'm not having it.
So. Yeah, that's fair.
Yep.
It's fine. Whatever you want to do. Walking Dead number 97. No, you offered a blank.
No, but there's a Walking Dead exemption for all.
Everyone knows the Walking Dead exemption on spoiler rules. Come on.
I know. There's been a bit of a new life in the Walking Dead lately, or where, you know, it's one of those books, like, it's the Walking Dead. You know what you're going to get. you know, it, the last page is going to want to make you read the next issue.
They're building to something, though.
Yeah, they are, and aliens. I like it. I just think that there's been some meaningful changes in the past few issues where they found another group of people, and then they were like, well, we're not trusting these people this time, and the guy's name is Jesus. It's probably Jesus, but and this other community has this problem that they are being bullied more or less by this other group of people who make them pay a tribute, basically, of half of their food and supplies. And in return for that, they clear out all the walkers around their community and don't attack the people in the community. And so basically Rick is like, all right, we can help you with that problem. So now they're hired thugs, basically. But Rick, whereas a couple issues ago, like he pushed away a potential love interest with the, we're all going to die. There's no point in loving anybody anyway. I'm sitting here. I love you. But no, I'm loving you. Your name is not Kira. So seriously, Real World Season 8, 1998. You gotta, best scene ever. And then he didn't leave the show for her.
So
where was I? But now he's sort of changed around. He's like, you know what? We can do this. We can build a life. We can be happy again. And I was like, oh, you're effed. It's gonna be great to watch that happen. So I enjoyed it. It's been a little more interesting to me than the TV show. Just because it's moving around a lot more. But it's The Walking Dead. You know what you're gonna get. It's fine.
Finally, Batman number 9 is hinting at some possible major retconning that Scott Snyder is going to embark in, which we don't know for sure, but it's hinting that there's a possibility that the Court of the Owls killed the Waynes, which would be a major shift in the.
If he does that, but it's still Joe Chill or Jack Napier or whatever, whoever the fuck it is.
Joe Chill.
Yeah, whoever it is now, if it's, you know. But he was an agent of the Talon. How do you feel about that?
See, I didn't even like when they identified Joe Chill, because to me the thing about Batman is that it's a faceless killer out there that he's always searching for.
Right.
You know, that's sort of the metaphor of his quest for justice is to find his parents' killer. And when they found him, when he finally did find him, they identified him as a person. They found him. He put him brought him to justice. It's kind of like he figured that would be the end of his
his
personal quest. But it didn't. So I thought it was more powerful when it's an unknown. Because then he represents all crime in the city, and it's a metaphor. But now
and it's also something he can never beat, and he can never solve, and so he can never fix it.
It's his windmill. Right. It would be his windmill.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You know what's funny is that I remember a number of months ago, Scott was asking these questions on Twitter and having conversations with it.
Yeah, how important
about
is it?
Yeah. And it sounded like he was of the same mindset as you. So my guess is, my hope is...
Yeah.
But he's not going to go that way because he seemed to agree that, you know, the idea of the person who killed his parents is much more important than the specific of who killed his parents.
I didn't even like the fact that the backup story is Jarvis Pennyworth, Alfred's father. You know,
is that a real thing?
Yes, his father's name was always Jarvis.
Okay.
Back to the Golden Age. That he was there for the Waynes, and I didn't like. I mean, I always liked the fact that Alfred basically raised Bruce. And
yeah,
you've got a little kid Bruce with Jarvis Pennyworth, and that to me makes less of the father son relationship changes a bit, you know.
Yeah.
I always like the fact that, you know, Alfred's been there since he was a baby, but now he's already basically a little kid here with Jarvis, so and then Jarvis gets poached by Tony Stark.
Now you know how those Firestorm people feel.
I know.
Just the fucking rugs just getting ripped out beneath you.
Other than that, though, I thought it was a great issue. It was the action, you know, it was the action-packed sort of bridge issue where Batman fights back, and now he realizes he can go all out because the Talons aren't really alive, so he can drop giant dinosaurs on them
in his Hulkbuster armor.
Right.
Wait, does the dinosaur, is it animatronic?
Apparently,
who knew? Yeah. That would be fun. I would totally just.
I'd ride that thing all the time.
I would RC that thing around all over the place.
I'd just take it to the kitchen.
Take it to the corner store.
I tweeted.
I'm going to get milk. It's going to take me a half an hour.
I would give a house guest a glass of water, and I would make him sit a Ford Explorer like a quarter mile away. Nothing else to look at until that ripple showed up. That's a different thing.
I tweeted it earlier in the week, but hold Wolverine the X-Men next to Batman. That's kind of funny.
It's very similar.
The covers are very similar. I wonder if they planned that. I don't know.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
I'm very much going to doubt that.
Coincidence.
But this continues to be probably the most popular book on iFanboy. And
by far.
Far.
Yeah, I know. We'll get to that in a bit.
But. And Grant Morrison has nothing to do with it, which is nuts. Because his books are popular, is what I'm saying. This show is brought to you by Graphically, as are all of the things that we do, in addition to the member contributions. Now, Graphically is a place where you can certainly buy and read all sorts of comics, but it's also a place where if you're a creator, a publisher of sort of any stripe, up or down, you can find a way to get your books out to as many people as possible in as many different ways as possible. If you are interested in sending your stuff to all the big major digital bookstores like Amazon or iBooks or other books like that, and really, like, if you think about it, getting your stuff out of just a comic book store and getting it into the big store where more people are, where more eyeballs are, where all those wonderful devices are connected to, then we've got a really easy way for publishers and creators to do that. So if you get over to graphically.com/partners, you can see how that works for a reasonable system that's made it easy for you to do something that was previously very, very complicated. And it's a great tool for creators and publishers.
And even if you just want to, even if you're, you know, you're a small creator and you just want to get your book out there, go to graphically.com, sign up, publish your book, and it's free to publish to the web. And you can also publish it to Facebook. And it helps you get, you know, show your work out there. It's great for portfolios.
Gives you tools.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It makes you a better commodity to sell your wares to the readers and to potential publishers. So
yeah, that portfolio thing's really cool. We've seen artists go on there and make an art book for themselves that they can then sort of distribute freely to people, and an easy way to read it, and it looks nice. You can embed it anywhere.
Yeah.
What is Facebook?
Don't renounce your citizenship, Connor.
No, Connor, the Facebook.
Oh, right. It's cooler.
Oh, that thing. I know what that is.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
If you've been catching up with the ending of Mark Waid's Boom books, I've got to say the irredeemable side of it has lost the thread for me a little bit. It's really out there in trippy science fiction, but Incorruptible, the 29th issue of which came out, which I believe is the second to last issue because 37, which will be the next Irredeemable, was the last one of those, came out, and it's much more grounded. I guess my point is, like, I've always liked that book, but it's like the other side of it, whereas Irredeemable book keeps getting more metaphysical and out there and science fiction wacky town. Incorruptible is this weird thing where everything is corrupt except for the main character, who of course used to be a bad guy, and I just keep finding it really interesting and fun. They've always had fairly competent artists on there that made it work also in a book that a lot of people aren't really talking about anymore, but it is the other side of that story. It's the other side of that coin that we're, you know, coming to the end of I'm guessing a 3-year run on, and I really enjoyed it, and I can't wait to see how it ends.
Was it the last issue of Irredeemable where Max Damage was in it? It was my favorite scene with him, where he walked up and there was all this big talk about what was going on with Plutonian, and Max Damage went, "Fuck this, I'm out of here," and turned around and left.
It was one of the recent ones. I don't think it was the last one.
That was my favorite moment.
Yeah, no, that was good.
Forget this.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, he wants nothing to do with it. He's
going back to my book.
No.
Yeah.
So Invincible 91.
Invincible 91 was a heck of a lot of fun in that sort of, like, everything's out the window. We're just going to have everybody fight each other as much as possible.
Yeah. I love dinosaurs.
Yeah, I really like dinosaurs.
A lot.
I mean, honestly, how dumb is that? And I say that with all due respect. It's
and affection, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, totally. And, I mean, look, I like dinosaurs. Let's call them dinosaurs.
What I love is that this plays on that idea of just like the fighting in comic books.
Yes.
You know, because so Dinosaurus and Invincible or Mark are able to escape from the Vulturemites and nobody can find them. So Adam Eve gets the new Invincible and Invincible's little brother to go find him. And as soon as they arrive and see him with Dinosaurus, they just start fighting. And like, how many times is like, stop fighting, you know?
Is new Invincible the most stereotypical character ever?
Possibly.
Nah, baby, listen.
It's more urban. Stop. I liked your hair better. Yeah. It was more urban.
Yeah.
Anyway, but it's good. It's always fun to read, so that's for sure.
It was. And Mark is not well.
Yeah, not well at all. over at Boom, actually, there was a new series that started this week, Higher Earth number one, with Sam Humphries writing it and art by, and I always get this guy's name wrong, and I want to get it right, an Italian name.
Francesco Biagini.
I really like the art. I really like this book. Basically, it's a little bit of science fiction, a little bit of alternate universes. Basically, you get the idea that traveling between alternate universes is possible, and we get introduced to two characters, and there's, you know, I can't tell you what's going on. There are swords, which I think is cool. But I love
very purple and blue.
Yeah. Yes, it's very purple and blue. But I dug it. I did enjoy it. I thought it was a good start. And that ties in within the same week that Hell Yeah number 3 came out, and again playing with alternate universes and alternate versions of people and alternate Earths. I think this issue, for those if anybody was confused about what Hell Yeah actually is, this issue laid it out really, really well. And I'm enjoying it. So I'm enjoying the ride. I still think Andre Siminowicz is got a long way to go on the art side. But I think, you know, every now and then you see a glimmer, you see a moment of like, okay, there's what his potential is. So I'm anxiously watching it to see it develop. So, yeah.
Super cool. The last issue of Lobster Johnson, The Burning Hand, number 5, came out this week. And this has been, without a doubt, like the most fun Lobster Johnson story I've ever read. Helped immensely. And I've said this before, but I just wanted to make sure that people knew it ended, which means that you have to – if you didn't read it, and this sounds like anything you want to, the trade will be coming out very soon. And the art by Tanji Zonzik is really good, really very good. It's the best art I've seen from him, and it isn't hurt by having Dave Stewart color it, obviously. But he's a guy who came out, and he was who is Jake Ellis. He was the artist on that, but he's sort of taken another step here, or this material's just, you know, a little better crafted for him or whatever. There was any problem with it before, but just all the way through, it's been a wonderful miniseries, and just has that great tone of being in the, I guess it's the 30s, with Lobster Johnson fighting like sort of almost stereotypical big fat criminals, like crime bosses from the time.
You know, someday I'm going to sit down and just read all of this shit.
I did that.
I know. I've never done it. Like, I don't read any of it, but someday I will.
Lobster Johnson, you can read it on its own. It's not connected to
it. No, I'm sure you can, but, like, someday I will. So.
You know what I'm going to do for you, Josh? I'm going to get me some Lobster Johnson glasses, the big orange ones.
And I'm just going to come out to my car, and one day.
Be sitting there.
Tap on the window.
Yeah, that would freak the shit. No. He'll be in the back seat.
Yeah.
Like, I'd sit in the car, and I'd turn it on, and they just see those two round orange circles, you know, in my rearview mirror, and just have a heart attack and evacuate myself right there.
And then when you do that, I'll just go sleep, and then I'll knock. You should knock out gas on you, and I'll leave.
Yeah. Or no, you got to burn me with a hand.
Jeez.
Yeah, you burn him with a lobster crawl.
Burning hand. So those are the books that came out this week that we enjoyed, but more books came out, and you went and read them and went to ifanboy.com/comics and did your pull lists and came back and rated and reviewed them and made your picks of the week. And our top 5 picks of the week of the iFanboy community lay out like this. An interesting top 5 this week, I thought. Number 5 was Wolverine the X-Men number 10 with 3.7% of the people making it their pick of the week at the time of recording. By the time you hear this, these numbers probably changed. But right now, this moment in time, that's what it is. Number 4 is Fatale number 5 from Brubaker and Phillips with 3.8% of the pick of the weeks.
Are we reading that? Anyone still reading that?
I am. Enjoyable. I mean, but not like... Like, it's good, but it not knock my socks off, blow my mind good, if that makes sense.
Gotcha.
Am I the only one reading it? Or?
Yeah, I dropped off.
Yeah, anyway. I'd be curious, Connor. I think you should read it in trade, because I'd be curious what the trade read is like, the self-contained story type thing. But yeah, I thought it was good. Anyway.
All right, okay.
Number 3 was Frankenstein, Alive, number 1, with 5.0% of the pick of the weeks. And if you're into Bernie Wrightson, you probably made it your pick of the week. Art alone is worth it.
Yeah, Frankenstein said everything he says 2 times. I'm going to go get the papers.
Number 2 is Green Lantern with 9.6% of the pick of the week, which I was surprised by.
Really?
Yeah. Well, knock. You didn't read it. It was he's explaining the Indigo Tribes, and it wasn't what I expected.
You're still reading it?
I'm still reading it. Oh, I'm still reading it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I thought you dropped off.
Nope. And the number one pick of the week, not terribly surprising, Batman number 9 with 58.1% of the picks of the week.
it's a drop for the book.
It's actually low.
Still, it is, yeah.
But still more than any president could hope to win in an election.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, so those are the picks of the weeks, and we want to hear what you thought of your books with reviews.
I will.
I'll read it.
Fine.
I didn't have a book in the last segment.
Yeah, go for it.
Whose fault is that?
Not mine. Maddie Batslayer reviewed Avenging Spider-Man number 7, gave the story 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5, and 1.4% of you made your pick of the week. And Maddie Batslayer says, do you like Spider-Man? Do you like kitties? If you answered yes to both of these, you will have a smile on your face the entire time you read this issue. I'll admit that I have no real knowledge of She-Hulk because I have been reading comics for only half a year now, and one of the reasons that I love these two-in-one style team-up stories is that I could introduce the new characters who hang out with one of my favorites. The series has just been dynamite almost every issue for me, except with the exception of the Hawkeye one. That's because that was Greg Land.
Yeah, it was painful. This was a lot of fun.
Love this book.
Yeah.
But it's going to get canceled.
Yeah. Yeah,
well,
who was on it at first? Was it Joe Madureira?
It was Joe Madureira. He did the first three issues, and then Land, and then Lionel Francis Yu did an issue, and this was the Immonen's. Catherine Immonen wrote it. Stuart Immonen drew it.
Yeah, Zeb Wells didn't write this, which I thought was interesting. Yeah, so.
But it's totally gonna get canceled. I would be shocked if it made it to 10 issues. What number is this? 7. Yeah.
7. Yeah. All right, our next review is from appropriately user Grifter78 reviewing Grifter number 9, the new relaunch Grifter, one of the three Liefeld helmed books from DC Comics. And I figured, you know, the best person to tell us who whether Grifter number 9 was any good was Grifter78, and he's
been weighing in on Wildstorm books all along.
Wait, yeah. Grifter78 is in the bag for Wildstorm.
Yes, will be
interesting.
Well, listen to his review. Okay, and it's long, so I can't.
What are the numbers on it?
Well, he gave the story a 2 out of 5 and the art a 1 out of 5.
Oh my. That's not possible.
Yeah,
that is not the Grifter78 I know.
Wait, actually, I need to check that. That number might be wrong. That might be the error in the script. I think he gave it a higher rating. Hang on a second. But
Josh.
Oh God, I have to vamp, don't I?
Just vamp. Tell us more about Kira.
Kira, I'm telling you.
She was the casting director on the show, lost her job, and then said to him, hey, now that I've lost my job, we can be together. Why don't you come with me? And he was like, I like being on TV.
All right, I was correct. Grifter78 actually gave the story a 2 out of 5 and the art a 3 out of 5.
Okay.
So a little more generous on the art side. And here's what he had to say. The new creative team of Rob Liefeld and Frank Thierry as Clo Plotters finally makes their debut this month, but unfortunately, a lot of the concerns fans had about this creative team are present in this issue. This mixed in with the surprisingly weak art by the normally solid Scott Clark does not make for a good beginning for this run. Those who know me know that next to Batman, Grifter is my favorite character. I've also been accused of being the cheerleader for all things Wildstorm related, and some
we
have
totally just did that.
And some have discounted my reviews because they think me biased. I'll admit that I do love the Wildstorm characters, and for the most part, I've been pretty lenient when it comes to their stories, but I have to say I was not happy with this issue of Grifter. Then he goes on to talk about it a lot, and he sums up with, this title was already on life support and it really needs something unique to get people to try it. It's frustrating as a fan because I love this character so much, but it's so hard to get people to read a book I myself am starting not to enjoy. But I am loyal and I will follow Grifter to the bitter end, but I hope Liefeld and Thierry have something big up their sleeves because this title needs serious help.
Liefeld and Thierry's an odd pairing.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Just odd.
Yeah. I did not pick up Grifter, but I did pick up Deathstroke, which was interesting in its own right.
Interesting. Yeah. Is that the one he's drawing too?
Yeah, yeah, it's the one he's drawing. Yeah. Mm.
How's that working out for you?
Pouches.
He's living up to it, huh?
Yeah. So go to ifanboy.com and look up Grifter number 9. You can read Grifter 78's full review. It's a very honest assessment of Grifter number 9. And you can read all the other reviews of the other comics over at ifanboy.com/comics.
It's too bad. I really like
it. That book should have been a no brainer.
Should have been a no brainer. Yep. They introduced Zealot in Deathstroke, so like he's put and also Deathblow as well in this book in Deathstroke it's not in Deathstroke and Grifter, so they're putting in more and more of the Wildstorm stuff in these books for some reason. So.
Makes me want to read a good Wildcats book. So what makes me want to read?
Yeah, doesn't it?
That isn't in the DC universe, but I guess that's just wishful thinking. Let us talk about the book of the month, which when I do it is on time every time.
How about you blow me?
It was a close call, though. I'll be honest with you. It was like Sunday night I wrote it. I was like, I guess I better do this. The book of the month is when it's time to change. It's time to rearrange. The book of the month for May for iFanboy.com is Flex Mentallo, the deluxe edition, as recently re-released, repackaged, and recolored by Vertigo and DC Comics.
Will you please call it by its proper title?
Flex Mentallo, Man of Muscle Mystery.
There you go.
Colon, the deluxe edition. I tried to leave that out of the title, and then I just couldn't do it, so I went back and put it in. I also knew that you would then go and put it in, so I didn't really have a chance. I have heard about this for a very long time, but I've never read it because it was out of print for a very long time, and some of you may remember it was he's similar to Charles Atlas, so they were worried about a threatened lawsuit. Well,
no, Ron knows this story better.
I know this story very well, and then one of the guys that shops at Isotope that I'm friends with, he's the one who wrote the letter to the Charles Atlas people to tell them about the comic. And then Charles Atlas threatened DC with a lawsuit, and then they took it out. They took it out of print.
So I always thought that this was some sort of so it's been out of print since it came out in
96.
When I wasn't even reading comics. And I figured, well, then it must be about some sort of like satirical version of Charles Atlas. No, not at all. I mean, it's not. It doesn't even really seem to touch on that at all, which is interesting. What it is a continuation, or it's actually sort of the middle of a conversation that Grant Morrison has been having in comics about comics for almost over two decades.
Yeah.
And you know what was started in Animal Man, where it was a very sort of postmodern look at you know, who's reading the comic, who's in the comic, who's creating the comic, and you'll have to read that to get a better assessment of it, to this, which it really is an exploration in comic book form, very slyly, of the history of comic books going through the Golden Age, the Silver Age, the Modern Age, and then what was considered to be the next age, which would be in the fourth issue, which we're going to talk about in a minute, you know, in comic book form. And it was very interesting and well done. I thought it was very candid.
It was really honest.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what candid means.
Right.
It's funny. I haven't read this since we did Grant Morrison Week, which I believe was in 2008.
Yeah.
So it's been 4 years. So I'm a little fuzzy in the details, but I did read it for that week. I wrote a review, which I actually got a pull quote in the back, which I didn't notice until just this moment.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I didn't know that either.
But it's a good quote, too.
It's a good quote. Good job, Connor.
I just want people at home to know that normally when we get a pull quote on the book, it's terrible. It's really like the grammar's off. Anyway, go ahead.
No, those are yours. My pull quote's always good.
You might like this, maybe. But it really is, and people complain about Grant Morrison.
Comment from some dude on the site.
His book is his books go really far out there, and they don't always come back. I thought this book was one of his most successful complete works in that it tells a full story. It makes sense in the end. It doesn't make sense necessarily in the beginning, but you stick to it to the very end, and suddenly everything makes sense. It's one of those pieces click into place books where you go, oh, holy shit. This whole thing is a very complete work that is a commentary on the history of comics within this story, which is very bizarre. It's certainly not your standard fare. It's not Justice League.
And this is, as I was saying, like, you know, he's been having this conversation. He had it in the Super Gods book, which he just released. He had it to a certain extent in his Batman work, sort of exploring the different parts of comics and what comics were. And what you do is you get a sense of a guy, at least at the time that this was written, who really is into certain aspects of comic books and not others. He really liked the out there imagination and freedom that this medium affords in this genre, but there was definitely an annoyance with what it has become and what, you know, there's a lot of very pointed criticism of people trying to maintain the same things that they had in adolescence in the same way through these stories.
Yeah.
And he de-sticks it to people a little bit. And I don't think completely, you know, not just readers, but the industry for sort of doing it over and over again and people trying to sort of go home again. And I know that what we're doing is explaining themes because I couldn't tell you what the narrative is exactly. I mean, the basic narrative is Flex Mentallo, the hero of the beach, is a made up superhero who came from some kid's imagination, and he sees that he's in the real world and also a friend of his, the Fact, is in the real world, but neither of them should be in the real world, so he's going off to find them. And then it goes all over the place.
One of Grant's longtime theories is, you know, bringing forth these characters into reality through through the creative collective consciousness. So that's what he plays with in the book.
I think it's a very interesting conversation to have. It's done very well. Like Connor says, it's grounded enough that it isn't so metaphysical and strange that you can't get a hold of it. You can't follow the threads. It's well done.
Well, I think it's one of his, and I'm a little tired of talking about it because I was on 11 o'clock comics and we talked about it for like 40 minutes.
Oh, we're sorry. Sorry. You're tired now that you talked about it.
But
I'm sorry, my wife. I can't have sex with you because I've been having sex with all sorts of other people and I'm just not up for it.
But if you want to listen to a better dissertation of it, go to 11 o'clock comics. But what I said in that was that I really – and Josh, you mentioned this in your written review on the site. But like this – I see this as like the bridge between Grant's early work, like getting his feet wet in comics, and then him getting, you know, okay, this is what I think of it. And this is like the real keystone between his early work and his modern work.
Definitely.
And I think that where this works is because it is only four issues and it is so focused and it is totally out there and confusing and crazy, but then it comes home and it comes together and you walk away with it. And I walked away with a sense of Morrison's reverence for superhero and comics in general and an idea of hope for the potential of them as a genre. And then the other point, which we haven't mentioned upon, is just that Frank Quitely is the fucking master.
Yes. No, and that's actually the next part. It's a complete and utter disservice to Frank Quitely that I've not mentioned him until now.
Totally, yes, yeah.
And I want to say that the other side of this coin, and to a certain extent, the more important side of this coin, the thing that grounds it, the thing that lets Morrison explore these ideas, is the fact that he has an artist as completely and utterly rock solid as Frank Quitely. Yeah. And one of the great things about Quitely, which is going to sound antithetical, is that we actually don't see him that often.
Yep.
So when we do, it's a special thing, and I don't want to see him doing a monthly book. I don't want him to be teamed up with somebody.
They bring
up
the best of each other, really.
They really do. I mean, it's really kind of eerie. And the other thing to think about this came out in 1996.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so think about that. We always talk about how shitty the 90s were. This came out in 96.
The thing about it, though, is that his idea of where comics are in a modern sense haven't changed since then.
Well, I think it's going slower than he had anticipated, but like genres and different genres, like honestly, I think, you know, like the stuff that's been happening more recently in the past couple of years is starting to come to fruition with what his hope for with the medium was in that fourth issue.
Being produced, but it's not being consumed at a rapid enough rate.
Yeah, no, exactly. The production, but not the mainstream acceptance. But back to Quitely, this was 96. Look at the comics we just talked about today. Does anything look like this?
No.
96.
No. One of the things that I was struck by is that and I mentioned this in my review, is that I think that you see a lot of people have an up or down reaction to Frank Quitely's work. They either really like it or really not. I think that in order to understand it fully, you have to be a little bit of a student of comics, and you have to watch what it is he's doing. You have to understand how it works. And if there's anything, that's what I am. It's what I'm, you know, I study comics. That's what I look at them. I try to understand them.
What you stand for?
It's what I stand for. It's what I am. And stop. And what I see when I look at Frank Quitely is this really interesting combination of the past and the future and on a comic book page at the same time. I can see the golden and silver age work in his work.
Yeah.
Almost more than anybody else out there. He's got that sort of odd rawness that Kirby had, but at the same time, there's something modern about it because nobody else's work looks like that. I don't want to use something as simple as detailed, but when he puts stuff on the page, I feel like it's there for a reason. And when you look at it just on a surface level, it looks a little odd, but it works. It works so well, and it's so interesting that I don't know who else could handle a script like this.
Yeah,
I don't know who could, and it's incredibly well thought out, and the designs are really interesting, and you know, the description of Muscle Man of the Beach really undersells it.
Yeah, no, it really does.
It's not what you're expecting. When I first read it, I didn't know what to expect at all. And then when I, you know, from the cover, Muscle Man of the Beach, Flex Mentallo was a Doom Patrol character. It's not what you expect. You don't expect this sort of deconstruction of comics and it to work so well as a narrative. Yeah, it's really it deserves all the hype it's gotten.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure. It was an absolute and it was thoughtful, and it wasn't bitter. Because it's really easy to satirize comics and be negative about it, I guess. And it's not that by any stretch of the imagination, but it's not a simple read. It's dense. It's thoughtful. It makes you work at it and think about it a little while I'm reading it. If you try to just read it on the surface, you're not going to like it.
I mean, and the thing is that like Grant Morrison comic is a challenge to read. It can be challenging.
Sure.
And sometimes it's more out there and challenging and difficult for people, the filth. Sometimes it's a little easier and a little easier to swallow. Probably X-Men, I think, or JLA.
JLA is probably right after this.
Yeah, it's his most accessible kind of work. Yeah, but the thing is that you're better for it. Like if you take the time to sit down with Flex Mentallo, I guarantee you will be better for the experience, because yes, it's out there, and yes, it's metaphysical, and yes, and all this kind of crazy ideas. But like I said, I walked away with such a feeling of love for comic books that I don't know how I don't know how you cannot get that. Like even this deluxe edition cover, and there's Flex standing there keeping back the pages of comics. I mean, that comics are consuming them. That is such a metaphor for what kind of Grant's and position is with this book. Mm-hmm. So
a couple of quick notes. This was recolored. There's been a little bit of controversy back and forth. I never saw the old book. I didn't know what it looked like. This color looked fine to me.
Yeah. Well, I think part of it was that a character changed ethnicity through the color. I think that was one of the problems.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, that was one of the things. But let's not.
Either way, listen, if color doesn't matter, then it doesn't matter. No. I don't know what it looked like.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't see color.
But it's a good, it's a good looking book. This book looks. If this book came out today, I wouldn't be like, oh, this book looks almost 20 years old.
Yeah. No,
because it's not even close to that. I think if you don't like Grant Morrison's metaphysical-y stuff, don't read this. You're not going to like it.
Yeah.
But if you do, or you're on the fence about it, then read it.
Yeah.
Because you know if you've read stuff and you're like, oh, that's not for me.
And if you've read Super Gods but haven't read this, you have to read this.
Absolutely.
This is almost like a graphic novel chapter of Super Gods.
Yeah.
Yeah. So so good. I'm so glad you picked this book of the month. Awesome.
Yeah, great book of the month.
Yeah. Cool. So yeah, go to iFanboy.com, read Josh's Book of the Month review. It's right there for you, waiting for you. All right, we're running a little long because we did the Book of the Month, but we're going to skip emails, but we will take a voicemail. And this Tim from Rhode Island's got a question about a creator.
Hey, iFanboy. This is Tim V from Rhode Island. Long-time caller, first-time listener. I just wanted to ask you guys, I recently read Batman vs. Bane, which was, I thought was a great book by Chuck Dixon, and it got me to wondering, why isn't Chuck Dixon more widely popular? Like, I feel like he's done so many great things, and Batman and Robin and Birds of Prey. Like, he's a really solid writer. He's done a ton of great stuff, but I feel like no one ever talks about him. Like, you talk about great Batman writers, people are like, oh, this is Frank Miller and Denny O'Neill and stuff. But no one ever seems to mention Chuck Dixon. I don't know. I just think he's great, and I was wondering what you guys think about him and why he's not more widely accredited. Thank you, guys. Keep up the good work.
It is kind of puzzling what has happened to Chuck Dixon. For a long time, he was a big deal. He wrote almost all the Batman books at once, which included Batman and then all the side character books, Robin, Nightwing, Birds of Prey. Yeah. He started Birds of Prey.
Those books were as good as those books have ever been when he was doing all of them.
Yeah. What I think, there's lots of reasons why he's just disappeared. He writes G.I. Joe right now.
He's not
gone out of comics. One of the reasons why he's out of the consciousness, I think, is because there was a boom in the early part of the 2000s where a lot of people joined up with comics. And he chose that moment to leave DC and go to CrossGen, which was a new company out of Florida. And it took Mark Waid went there and George Perez. And he just sort of never came out. He came back, but then stuff happened. But I think he chose the exact wrong moment to leave the mainstream comic world and go to this other thing. And then
CrossGen was an experiment.
He never sort of recovered from that, having left DC right when the last sort of influx of readers came. So a lot of people don't even know who he is or what he did. I mean, how important he was to the DC universe for a long time.
It's interesting that a lot of the artists came out of CrossGen stronger and better than they had been before they went in, and they were sort of let back in. But the writers took a little while to get – even Mark Waid took a little while to sort of
get the groove going back after that.
And maybe it was, you know, because you left the company and went to do something else.
Dixon came back, but it was the stuff he did for DC wasn't as good as the stuff he used to do. He wrote a couple of things, and then he left very, very quickly in a huff.
Well, he was fired, was his contention. Or maybe he didn't say that, but I'm no longer working for DC as of right now.
It was all of a sudden. We never found out why he got fired.
And then, you know, he's been doing G.I. Joe. And tell you something, he's real good at G.I. Joe. His G.I. Joe stuff is solid. It's not like run to the store and get this, but it's solid if you like that kind of thing. There's almost nobody. He's right up there with military stories, that guy. You know.
But if we've been doing this show in the late 90s, then, first of all, we'd be super rich. Second of all...
super rich.
Well, it'd be gone by now.
We would have innovated podcasting. We would have talked about him every week.
Because he
was doing five or six books. They were all super good.
He was in the Batman world, right?
He owned the entire Batman world. He did one of the Batman books plus all of the Sidekick books. We would have talked to him every week.
Yeah.
But it just so happens that he left to go cross-gen and then sort of never recovered for whatever reasons. So he'd be still out there. People don't know. People who came on Civil War around that time don't know who he is or why.
Sound like Kevin Bacon and JFK.
But also people don't know, man. They got to know the truth. You know why you don't know anything? Because you've never been.
Anyway. All right. Anyways, Mr. Garrison. So
fine looking man, Mr. Garrison.
So if you've got any questions
for us. A man likes to make more of himself than he is, especially in, anyway.
If you got any questions for us, you can email us at contact@fanboy or call 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. Awesome. Okay, cool. So we talked about Flex Mentallo, written by Grant Morrison, and some of you might have heard that I'm actually working on a project with my friends who run the Isotope Comics in San Francisco. We're putting on a comic convention called Morrison Con. We hope that you all can make it. It's in September 28th to the 30th in Las Vegas at the Hard Rock Hotel. And tickets are on sale now. Grant Morrison, joined by Jim Lee, Jonathan Hickman, Gerard Way, Frank Quitely, J.H. Williams III, and Chris Burnham, and we've still got more guests to announce. You can get your tickets now. Get them. They're going quickly. And we hope that you can make it. Check out morrisoncon.com for all the info.
It's a small, intimate show.
Small, intimate show, yeah. It's going to be less than 1,000 people are going to attend. So if you ever wanted to meet any of those creators, now's your chance. So, and also... now's your chance to hear about Nightwing. I talked to writer Kyle Higgins about Nightwing number 9 on iFanboy Don't Miss, and it's going to be coming out on Monday, tomorrow, after you listen to this, if you're listening on a Sunday. You can go to ifanboy.com and you can listen to it there, or you can subscribe to iFanboy Don't Miss in iTunes, and where you can hear interviews with creators talking about a book that you absolutely need to pick up when it comes out on Wednesday. And really interesting to hear about the whole Night of the Owls from Kyle Higgins' perspective, and he has some choice words about Scott Snyder.
So, ooh.
Yeah.
That guy's working in Chuck Dixon's shadows, what he's doing.
Yep.
And that's not a bad thing, but you know, that's the world Chuck created. Oh, Make Comics Podcast is the comic podcast that I do on Wednesdays. Well, I do it before that, but you hear it on Wednesday with Andy Schmidt from Comics Experience. Andy was an editor at IDW and before that at Marvel for a while. And he knows all sorts of good, important things. And I ask him questions because I make most of the stuff I know up. We'd like to take a topic about wanting to break into comics in very many different disciplines, writers, artists, all that kind of stuff, and try to shed a little light on it for a little while. It has its own feed now. If you've been getting it on the main iFanboy feed, make sure to resubscribe to the new feed. The links are on the most recent show, or you can search, you know, iTunes for Make Comics and iFanboy. You'll find it. That's all I have about that.
Cool. And you can find all that at ifanboy.com. You can find Josh's Book of the Month review. You can find my Pick of the Week review. You can find the Don't Miss podcast. You can find everything that's awesome about comic books at ifanboy.com. Updated daily with new posts and new – we've got tons of previews and articles and discussions and all this great stuff. Just enjoy the world of comics while you're there. Go to ifanboy.com/about where you can find us as well as all the other contributors to iFanboy and follow us on social media and all that fun stuff. But if you want to stay in touch with iFanboy, follow us on twitter.com/ifanboy and on Facebook. At facebook.com/ifanboy.
Wait, Facebook?
What is that?
What is that? You don't know.
Do we have a Friendster page?
No, we never did it. No, Friendster was gone before we started. We do have a MySpace page that's out there, I think.
Verb.
Yeah.
Verb. I never signed up for that. I knew. I had the stink of death about it. You can email us at contact@ifanboy. Email is something that old people use. before they had texting and Facebook. Or you can leave us a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697 with any questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics, etc. But seriously, don't ask me a question I can just look up on Wikipedia. That's not fun for anyone.
No.
There it is. I said it. That's a pet peeve, damn it.
Also, we've got...
No, you look that up. You don't need that for me.
We've gotten a surprising number of people calling us asking about to buy comics. We don't sell comics, so we're not...
Anything that's manufactured or processed.
Yep. I don't know. I don't want to sell or buy those things. But if you want to make an offer, you know, I got boxes. They got to move. You know.
Are they priced to move?
They could be. Let's talk. What do you? How much you got? I'm not going to say.
I certainly don't want them.
Jeez.
I
have a 110-pound box in my garage full of stuff that Connor sent me, and I can't move it.
Have you opened? Did you open it? Do you know what's in it?
I looked in it. Yeah. I just haven't figured out how to move it.
We confirmed that Connor's sister's not in the box.
Yeah, no, she's not. Okay. Well, she might be at the bottom. I didn't dig. It's really heavy.
Did you like the puppy?
Oh, fuck. Excuse me.
All right. If you like the show, go to iTunes, write a review for the show, for the Don't Miss Show, for the now the Make Comics podcast, which has its own feed. So write a review. Be the first to write a review for Makes Comics on iTunes.
Yeah, go find an iTunes, subscribe, and write a review.
Yeah, so do that for any of the shows you enjoy, not just our shows, any podcast you enjoy. It's the easiest way to help out the shows that you listen to and enjoy. Help find the new audience and grow and continue on.
Yep. Hells yeah. All right. Well, thank you for listening and enjoying this fun time. Josh is gone, so until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
Oh, I'm here.
I'm Kira.
I like how it fizzled right there. Well, thanks for listening, I guess.
I'm loving you.
Loving you, Kira. I'm sitting here telling you. I'm giving you everything.
And it's killing me.
Oh, if you are under 30, you got no idea. Well, maybe younger. 25? I don't know. What are the kids like? All the new real world is just
sex,
orgies, and hot tubs and drunkenness. We never used to have that in the old days. In the old days, we dealt with the racial stereotyping and
high-waisted jeans.
Miss Snotnose is on her way to becoming Mrs. Evans. Both of us climb into our Mercedes two-seater and head for the town hall in Riverside. Afterward, we uncorked one magnum of Dawn after the other. Where? On the courthouse lawn. And then we get loaded. We had a long 2-day honeymoon in Palm Springs. I held Allie tight in my arms. I love you, Evans. I love you. Forever, Evans. Forever. I whispered back, forever, darling. And promise me, never leave me. I promise you, baby, I won't. Not even for 2 weeks. Not for one kid.